So I'm going to start by showing you a picture this morning. That's my niece, Michaela. Oh, thank you. I think she's cute too. We've been really close her whole life, but we started living together when she was 3. And when she was 5, my mom and I started raising her together. I'm going to keep that up for a while so you can look at her. The picture on the left was taken before her first day of second grade. And then the picture on the right was taken just this past week on her first day of 8th grade. And when I was looking at those two pictures, you know, of course you have to sort through pictures to find one from that far back. And it just blew my mind how fast she grew up. Right? I look at that little girl on the left and I think about that sweet little second grader. And then I saw pictures of like her first dance recital when she was 5 and of us on a Saturday morning when she was about that small too. And I look at her wide-eyed wonder and her sweet face, and I think about just how innocent and joyful she was. And then I look at the little girl on the right who is not so little anymore and who is a sassy and bright and beautiful teenager. And as much as I celebrate who she is now, I can't help but be sad about who she's not anymore and be a little afraid about where she's going, right? Because I blinked and she was 13. And the next time I blink, she's going to be in high school. And the time after that, she's going to be driving. And the time after that, she's going to be finished with school. And I can't make it all slow down. And we had Meet the Teacher, the Thursday before she started school. And as we left the building, I started to cry. I was that parent. And I told her, I was like, this is it. This is your 8th grade year. This is the end of middle school. You're not a baby anymore. And she hasn't been a baby for a long time, but I think there's something about that realization that you can't like live in denial anymore. So anyway, it just got me thinking, and it just is a flood of emotions. And you all, I mean, I see a lot of nodding heads, right? We know that feeling where we just want to hold on tight to those precious moments. We want to keep things where they are. I had that moment just before worship as we're in the cafeteria area together, and I'm looking at these kids, some of whom were born. Like, I've known them since they were born. And some of them who, you know, I've known since they were in elementary school, they were the age of the one on the left there, and now they're getting ready to graduate from high school, or they already have, and it's like, whoa, slow down. And we all know that feeling because we all have had that experience, right? Whether it's our biological children or those that we love as our own, we know that feeling of just wanting to hold on tight. Kind of like how the other day I realized I need to start planning for Christmas, which is going to be here in like 5 minutes, and I feel like just happened 5 minutes ago, right? It all just feels like it's going too quickly, and we want to hold on to now. We want to hold on to innocence. We want to hold on tight, and we don't want to journey into the unknown because the unknown is scary. We want to hold on to this moment right now where everything, we know what it is, and it's predictable, and even when it's not great, it's familiar. Right, and we have good reason to feel all of these things because to be afraid of the unknown because we know what the unknown brings. We know that sometimes with the unknown there's imminent threat. Right, we know that sometimes as we send those little ones off to their first day of school or to tackle each new milestone, there's always the possibility of threat or danger. When I think about Michaela being in high school, it makes me afraid and I want to hold on tight because I know what happens in high school, right? I've been there and I've hung out with a lot of high schoolers and I want to protect her from that, which is the other reason we want to hold on tight, right? We have this instinctive desire to protect who or what we love, which is, of course, just exacerbated by our own journeys, right? We've been hurt. We've had to deal with scary things. We've been faced with the unknown, and we have this longing to keep our loved ones from dealing with any kind of pain at all costs. And sometimes we have all of these feelings just simply because we're empathic, right? Because to be empathic is to understand and share the feelings of another. And so when we feel their fear, when we fear their pain and their trepidation, we share in that emotional response. And it's easy to get caught up in those feelings, and we don't want to feel them, right? We just want to hold on to and stay comfortable and closed, and we don't want to feel all of those things. And then sometimes we've got all of these feelings because we just get it, right? We're smart people, and we know cognitively because we have the ability to reason. we can use our brains for logical deduction that certain activities, certain environments, certain situations make us especially vulnerable. So we've got all of this that's real life and all of the feelings that it produces, and that's a lot. My friend Jean says, the longer you're alive, nothing surprises you anymore, right? You end up knowing someone who's gone through some of everything. And I think that sums it up pretty well. Jean's in her 70s, and she told this to me a couple of years ago, and I thought, well, maybe when I'm in my 60s, I'll feel the same way. Friends, I'm in my mid-30s, and I feel that now, right? Because life is happening all around us. Life brings experiences that at our most innocent, we never imagined would happen to us or to those that we love. But there are experiences, and they touch our hearts, the good and the bad, and they bring wisdom, because through these experiences we learn, right? But there's a deeper wisdom, a deeper learning that we gain when we journey through our experiences in faith instead of fear. When we entrust our circumstances and their outcomes to God's sovereignty and power. And our scripture today is an example of this. When the disciples submitted to faith and to Christ's power, they gained wisdom and they were changed. In the text today, Jesus and the disciples had just fed the 5,000. There had been this crowd, and Jesus now is doing what Jesus does, where he calls the disciples to take time away. Because Jesus values both a balance of being with people, but also being set apart, taking time away to rest and have reflection with God. So he dismisses them to that time, but he does the same. He goes up to the mountain by himself to pray. Because Jesus is actually grieving right now. Jesus is grieving because before they fed the 5,000, see, the crowd just showed up, right? Jesus had gone to be by himself because he had just learned that his cousin John had been killed. So because Jesus' time of reflection, he ended up changing and using that time to be with people, he now went off to be by himself to reflect, to renew, and to feel his grief and to his sadness. So there are the disciples, they're out in the boat. The wind and the waves are getting out of hand. And so Jesus goes out to them. Now they're all stirred up, right, because of the storm. There's stormy water around them and they're scared. They're afraid of the unknown. And then they see Jesus walking on the lake. So of course, why wouldn't they think they were seeing a ghost, right? How often are we like that? Our circumstances stir us up. We become afraid and anxiety takes over. We're on high alert, maybe even a little irrational because we've got all of these feelings we can't manage and we're afraid. Sometimes it's because we know too much, right? That can also stir us up and put us on high alert. And therefore, we're just on defense waiting for the worst possible outcome. And that's what's going on here. So Peter, bold Peter, challenges this ghost who says he's Jesus, and he says, if it's you, tell me to come to you on the water. Now, I don't know what Peter's plan was if it really was a ghost, right? It seems perhaps he actually knew it was Jesus, and that because he knew it was Jesus, he knows, therefore, that Jesus is divine and is capable of walking on water, but who knows, right? So, of course, he asks Jesus to tell him to come, and Jesus says, come. So Peter gets out of the boat. He gets out of the boat and steps onto the waves, which then I think he realized it maybe sounded like a better idea than it was, right? Because as soon as he got out there, he's in the wind and the waves and he's freaking out. And he got scared and he started to sink. And so he cries out, Lord, save me. We know that cry, don't we? Lord, save me. And of course Jesus did. He reached out his hand and he caught Peter. But he said to him, you of little faith, why did you doubt? We feel Peter, don't we? We step out into the storms of our lives and we doubt. We lose faith. Fear takes over. I think Peter doubted Jesus for the same reason we do. Sometimes we worry that Jesus won't come through. I don't know why, But that's our concern, right? Or we know that we have to go through the hard thing. We know that we have to, and that makes us afraid. And our coping mechanism is to hang on and to handle it ourselves. We get caught up in the anxiety and the fear, and that's what we operate out of. We forget to look to Jesus. We forget to let him walk with us. Kind of like this.
Mac, it's okay.
Why are you doing this to me?
This isn't me.
You told me to come out here.
Mac, this is happening inside you. You're letting it consume you, and you don't have to. Just take a deep breath and listen to my voice.
Don't look at it, Mac. Look here. Don't think about the past. Don't think about the pain. Look at me. Everything is gonna be okay. Look at me. Trust me, none of this can hurt you. Just keep your eyes on me. Breathe. Good, Mac. I'm not going anywhere.
Get you out of this boat.
What?
That's from The Shack. If you haven't seen it, make time for that. So Mac, he hadn't dealt with his pain. He hadn't dealt with his guilt and his fear because of what happened both to him in his childhood and then to his own children. Because he didn't deal with any of those feelings, they stayed under the surface and they dictated his response to everyone and everything around him. So as he sits in that boat and fears he'll drown or die and that all along God meant harm for him, Jesus tells him, "Look at me. Look at me." That's what Peter forgot to do. And that's what we need to do. We need to look to Jesus. Trust that he will keep us safe, that he will redeem our circumstances, and that he will, as he always has been, be victorious. In order for us to live as people of faith, people who truly trust in the Lordship of Christ, we have to first acknowledge our own feelings. What are they? Where do they come from? What are we afraid of and why? And that's like an ongoing check-in process, right? We need to not be afraid to feel. Because in that clip, Mac was pushing all of his feelings away. They were too much for him to manage. He needed to acknowledge his feelings. And it makes me wonder what feelings Peter was avoiding or neglecting when he stepped out onto those waves. Friends, if we can manage our feelings, if we can deal with them, even though it's uncomfortable, and trust that Jesus will journey with us in what caused the feelings in the first place, and if we trust that Jesus will stay with us as we surrender our pain, we can free ourselves from letting those feelings dictate our responses. And then we need to get out of the boat. Jesus goes up to Mac at the end and says, "Now let's get you out of that boat." And I think that's both literal and figurative, right? We need to let Jesus help us out of the boat of our own making and into a life where we trust God to be sovereign and trust Jesus to redeem. Sometimes all of what we're feeling, all of our grief and our fear, it's about circumstances outside of our own personal lives and experiences. Right, because we're a people who care. We care about others, and we care about many injustices in the world, both the close and the far away. I know that's true for me. I get wound up about hungry children. who aren't fed properly, who go to bed hungry, or who in the summer when they're not in school don't know where their next meal will come from. I get wound up about poverty. Those that we see on the side of the road asking for something, or who come in to our churches who don't have a place to stay or don't know where their next meal will come from or can't meet their own basic needs. I worry about widespread disagreement around families who want to come and live in our amazing country in light of its imperfections. I get wound up about those who really need mental health care and can't afford it. I get wound up. I start feeling lots of things, and we all have those issues, right? We all have those things that cause us to be stirred up. At least I hope we do. And when we get stirred up, sometimes that ends up presenting as anger, but what we're actually feeling is grief and pain and sadness and fear, and it gets masked by the anger because it's actually a psychological truth that it's easier to feel angry than it is to feel the deep pain that our fear, our empathy, our intuitive need to protect the vulnerable raises. It's more comfortable to hate a political candidate or officer than to deal with the fear within us. It's easier to be angry with a closed-minded family member than it is to experience the depth of conflicting feelings and fear that are actually lying underneath. But feeling anger alone doesn't get us where we need to go. Feeling anger doesn't get us out of the boat and allow us to feel the feelings that will make space for Jesus to come in and make something new. So I ask us the same question Jesus asked Peter. Why do we doubt? Right now, today, what is wrapped up in our doubt? We get on a boat like the disciples and we want to ride the wave out with white-knuckled control. We want to rely on the people around us, on what is predictable and certain, and not venture into the windy unknown. As disciples of Christ, we're called to be Christ-like all the time. And sometimes this means walking on water even in a storm. This means trusting Jesus to journey with us, to not leave us to our own devices. But first, we must surrender our own devices and take Jesus' hand. So feel your feelings. Start with sadness. Feel all of that. Because somewhere along the way, we've been told that it's not okay to feel, that it's not productive or healthy. But Jesus did. He stepped away to be with God and to feel. In fact, the shortest scripture in the Bible tells us that Jesus felt his feelings. John 11:35 says Jesus wept. And if Jesus did it, we should too. And remember that Jesus not only calls us to feel, but feels and weeps with us. So pay attention, don't avoid the feelings, learn where they come from, and allow that wisdom to help increase your faith, not mask it with anger. Let's learn how to manage our emotions constructively so that our grief doesn't turn to anger, because once it's anger, it becomes isolating and potentially alienating, and we can't be a part of the solution when we're part of the problem, right? And walk with Christ. Stay focused on Jesus, always, period. We know what happens when we don't. And trust Jesus to be Lord over all. Not only your sin and your personal life, but our church, our community, our families, our country, our world. And do something. Get out of that boat. Because some of us get immobilized by our feelings, just like the disciples were. We aren't gonna move, are we? We're just gonna sit and wait for the storm to blow over. But whatever the storm is, there's always something we can do. First, we can always pray, right? In fact, that's a pretty critical first step. If it's a political issue that has us stirred up, we can write our elected officials. If it's a justice issue, we can be part of the solution by meeting even the need of one who is a victim of injustice. There was a seven-year-old 2 years ago named Aaliyah who was inspired to leave painted rocks outside with the sole mission of spreading kindness and making people smile. She loved to draw rainbows. They made her happy, and she wanted to make other people happy. That's it. And that's what she did. She made 500 rocks, and then she decided she was going to sell them for $1 each to give to her favorite local cause, which was a local homeless shelter, right? This is a seven-year-old who rainbows made her happy. She wanted to make other people happy, and she cared about the local homeless shelter. And it's taken off from there, right? There are a million initiatives out there that show us even the smallest act can be a game changer. Ultimately, Peter stepped out because of his faith. Right? I don't think he had a game plan if that really was a ghost out there, because he had faith that it wasn't. And because of his faith, Peter was used to do great things in Jesus' name. So what boat are you in today? What in your life or in our world is stirring you up? Whatever it is, look to Jesus. Keep your eyes on him, but get out of the boat and do something.